Coming up, I'm going to tell you what I learned after speaking to 2,500 plus quitters, and then the freight rail strike that got averted. What does it tell us about employers and employees? And I'm going to coach you up. Let's go. Welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you win at work and at life. My goal, for you to make more income and more impact in your work. More money, more meaning, baby. Let's go. So when I was growing up, my dad and mom, you know, great, 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 great home, raising a great home. And my dad would pass along to me all the time a phrase that's been around, who knows how long it's been around, probably since he was a kid before that. And the phrase goes like this. Quitters never win, winners never quit. Right? Or maybe you heard it the other way. Winners never quit, quitters never win. However you heard it, the order you heard it, but you know, you go, oh, well, now that's pretty good, Dad. Right? Okay, all right. Pretty straightforward. Winners never quit. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Quitters never win. Yeah, I mean, I get that. Got it, Dad. Don't quit. And it's one of those great little phrases that's half true. At best, that's half true. And you can make that work, but you got to do some mental gymnastics to get it to half true. But I'll go ahead and do that. That's not my point. My point is this is the idea that we have. And it's in our humanness, you know. If you're doing something and you leave it half finished, there's a sense of guilt about that that we all kind of have. And I think it's largely based on acceptance. I really do. This notion that I'm feeling guilty about quitting. I mean, how many times have we had those calls on the show? I don't think they'll ever stop coming in. Ken, I want to quit my job. I know I'm supposed to quit my job, but I feel guilty about it. Why? Did you do something wrong? No. Well, you know, and I always identify for them. You're really not feeling guilty for quitting. You know what you're feeling? You're feeling a little bit of fear of what someone's going to say about you. And they always go, oh, yeah, that's it. All right. So this is my point. The notion that quitting is bad comes from the emotional tie we have to it of if I quit, what will others say? What will others think about me? All right. Now I got that out of the way. I've talked to at least 2,500 people on this show or at live events where I'll do live Q&A of people who quit, who want to quit. And so I'm going to tell you, I'm going to break down what I've learned. Okay, but let's first go back to the old phrase that quitting is actually one of the most important things you can do in your life. If you're quitting the right thing, meaning that quitting the thing you should be quitting for the right reason. So I'm quitting smoking. Great. It's a great thing to quit, right? Good for your health. Makes sense. I'm quitting this toxic job. Great. You are taking your mental and emotional health, your professional future into your hands. Good. It's a great quit. I'm going to quit 1 year into this degree that's 4 years, and I don't have the money to pay for it, so I'd have to go into debt, and I don't want to do it. I don't think I need it, and I certainly can't afford it. It's great quit. It's great. I launched a business on the side and never really hit, never really took off. And I've tried several different things. I've kind of pressed through the failure and I've come to the conclusion it wasn't the right product, not the right delivery, not the right time, whatever it is. And it's just continuing to lose money. I'm going to quit that. It's a good thing to quit. All right. So, quitting the right thing for the right reason is actually one of the most important things you can do. And as I walk through those things, I hope you see that many successful people, for their health, for their relationship, for their kids, for their future, for their finances, they quit something and life was better. There's no shame in quitting the right thing for the right reasons. But quitting is something that, again, we attach emotional shame to, And then we also get stressed because we go, I know I should quit the thing. We're talking about jobs, but I'm scared about the unknowns attached to the future. And so that's another reason why people don't want to quit. And they make an excuse to go, well, quitting is silly. Quitting is risky. Quitting is fill in the blank for whatever unwise word you want to use. And again, that's an excuse. So I want to give you the background of what I learned. I jotted some thoughts down. Having talked to thousands upon thousands of quitters, what have I learned? Number one, quitters want something better. They do. They just, they want better health. They want better pay. They want better experience, better relationship. That's why people quit. They want something better. Specifically, as we saw in the Great Resignation, where now 60 plus million people have quit their jobs in this big rush to get a better gig or a better paycheck. Well, that was what they wanted. They wanted a better paycheck. But a lot of them realized, man, that better paycheck doesn't feel better for long. I kind of get used to that. I kind of adapt. I end up blowing it. I'm not saving it. They're looking for a better environment. They're looking for a better future. In other words, a better life. When I speak to leaders, and I get the opportunity to speak to leaders all the time, because from this unique position, I can say, hey, here's how you create a great culture. Here's how you create an engaged workforce. I know. I'm an expert. I talk to people who are leaving leaders every day. And so one of the things I tell them is as a leader, you must understand that the new way to view work and workers is that they are coming to you not for a better job, but for a better life. It's bigger. We're talking about benefits. We're talking about advancement and training that will help them professionally. They're not just coming for a paycheck, and they may not even be able to articulate it that way, but I'm telling you that's what they want, a better life. Number two takeaway, that quitters quit leaders, not companies. They're actually not quitting company XYZ. They may say bad things about the company when they leave, but I'm telling you, ultimately what they're quitting is their direct leader. Their direct leader has tremendous responsibility for their reason for quitting. Now, it could be that the leader did something harmful to them, said something, maybe overlooked them, rejected, meaning not actually harmful, but it's perceived as harmful. If you didn't give me a promotion that I wanted, you overlooked me, you didn't give me a pay raise when I wanted it, people get offended, they get upset, they leave. I get it. So these are the type of things where at first it's like, oh, the leader did something bad and I don't like them and I'm out, right? So they did something to them that is perceived as a negative or harmful action. Could have been something said, could have been something gross, you know? But I find that it's also people will leave leaders because leaders did not do something for them. Sometimes it's a negative a specific thing. They did this. I didn't like it. But this other little one is a bit more nuanced. They didn't do something for me, meaning they didn't train me. They didn't invest in me. They didn't believe in me. They didn't give me a shot. They didn't notice me. You see the difference? That's more passive. And the third reason, they often feel guilty. And I talked about that earlier. I'm re-raising that issue. They feel like they're a bad person for leaving. And fourth, they quit to something new and terrifying, but it's exciting and they want it. This is the Ken Coleman Show. D, I have the gift of gab. You like talking about exciting things that help people. You like a challenge. You like connecting with people. You might want to think about a wonderful and vibrant career in sales. But maybe you go, I don't know. I've never done sales. I never had sales training. I didn't go get a degree in it. I have no experience. You don't need any of that. What you need is Sales 101. The latest course from me and Ramsey Career Academy. We're teaching you how to win in sales. How to win. How to get in and how to win. So that's for someone who's never done it. You want to get in, you want to get hired, or you're in it and you really want to level up. This course is for you, Sales 101. I and Chris Campbell are Ramsey Solutions Senior Vice President and the best salesperson we got in the building. combined to teach this course. It's very practical, extremely affordable, and extremely effective. RamseySolutions.com/sales course is the website. RamseySolutions.com/sales course. Go get it now. All right. I want to break down the recent threat of a rail strike. And I would also tell you that the news covered it, right? And then it was like, well, they came to an agreement, but that agreement has not been ratified, a little old word that's kind of fancy, and you haven't heard it since the fifth grade in your civics class about ratifying the Constitution. But in other words, there's been an agreement, but it still has to go through a voting process. So the powers that be that were negotiating on the railroad company side and then the union representatives, they came to an agreement. And they kind of walk out of the room and go, okay, this is what we think is the agreement, but we got to take it to our members, and they got to vote it up or down. And so there is still a threat of a strike. There's no question about this. Why? Members of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, District 19, already rejected the agreement. They did, though, agree to postpone a strike until September 29. So basically they're going, we don't agree with this, but we're not going to strike. We'll push that to September 29th, give you more time to get back in the room and cut a deal. So there's more local union districts that are going to need to vote on this. So still a lot of work left to be done. This could come back around. Now, here's why I'm covering this. Okay. There's a big takeaway that I'm going to give you leaders. I know I have people here that are leaders, your managers. Maybe you're not the ultimate say, but there's something really vitally important and simple that you need to understand that is so simple. And you can meet this need. You can do this, leaders, and not see an organization get into this kind of crap. Even with unions, as difficult and as sticky as unions are, because it's always us versus them. You know, none of this had to happen. I'm not going to get into all the details, but there's a big wage increase that include payouts and bonuses that are kind of retroactive. But at the heart of this, according to everything I've read and seen, okay, at the heart of all of this is really not money. It's about sick leave. Now, salaries are getting bumped significantly. There's an additional paid leave day a year. So we're talking 1 day a year, okay? And then this was honestly stunning that the railroads agreed in this latest negotiation to let their workers take unpaid time off for doctor's appointments or medical procedures without being penalized under their attendance rules. I read this and I try to readily admit that I'm not the smartest person in any room I go to. This makes my head hurt. I want to make sure you catch it. Plain spoken. I'm going to read it to you. Railroads also agreed to let workers take unpaid time off for doctor's appointments or medical procedures without being penalized under their current rules. What are we doing? I don't understand how we get here. I do, and I'm going to explain it in just a second. But I don't understand this. I mean, just to give you an idea, 95%, so it's between 95 and 96% of employers in the United States offer at least some paid sick days to their employees. Many outsiders, including me, to the industry, were shocked to learn that railroad employees, excuse me, did not have this benefit in their contracts. There goes the pesky voice. Now, there's two people to blame here. Okay. Certainly the union should have had this in previous negotiations. The union's sole job is to look out for their members. I don't know how they missed this, but as much as I'd love to poo-poo and blame the union members for being doofuses, how is it that we would even have to negotiate for this? If you railroad executives, I would love to, Alex, line them up and walk them into the studio here and have them sit down like this is a court of law and go, hey, can I ask you a couple quick questions? Okay, great. Yeah. Why is it that you have a problem paying for people's time to go to the doctor or get a medical procedure when almost 96% of American corporations allow this? What was going on? As I said, about 96% of American employers offer some sort of paid sick leave. The number of days does range from one day a year to unlimited. But there are industries where still, this is according to Johnny Taylor, the SHRM president, Society of Human Resource Management, said there are still industries where workers have no days designated to sick leave. And I don't understand that. It's like there's a human chip missing with leaders here. Am I right, Alex, or am I overly... I just want to make sure. Am I being unreasonable here? Like, how is it that I don't care what industry that you go, if somebody's really sick, and I don't mean someone who's making up stuff, that'll be readily made available over time. Somebody's lying to you. But I mean, somebody's really sick. And you're not going to let them go to the doctor or give them some paid sick leave? Only 14 states in the United States have laws guaranteeing paid sick leave, and those laws often exclude workers in some industries, including government employees as well as railroad and airline employees. Workers who don't get any sick days tend to be low-wage workers and needs working part-time. This is according to Eileen Applebaum, co-director of the think tank Center for Economic and Policy Research, and this pisses me off. There is no reason in the world, leaders of large corporations that employ lower wage workers, hourly workers or part-time workers, that you can't give those people the dignity of taking care of themselves when they need to take care of themselves. No wonder you have high turnover. SHRM said the human SHRM, Society of Human Resource Management, said there's a trend toward giving employees a bank of paid days that can be used for any purpose, sick day, vacation day, or personal day. Again, all that's great. But here's what I wrote down. And this is what I want to talk about. When this type of situation is happening, it is leadership that is focused on policy, not people. I just, there it is. You want to know how asinine, stupid policies like this happen and end up taking on a union negotiation over this? It's when a corporation goes, well, what's our policy on this? Now, some of you are going, Ken, you're being a little bit extreme. No, I'm not. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have policies. But policies ought to be focused on principles. If you have principle-based policies that are focused on people at the other end of your policy, then you will have good policy. So I'm not anti-policy. What I'm saying is when there's a focus on policy absent of people and thus a principle, then you have this kind of leadership activity and a lack of common sense. Here's my point. Somebody asked me the other day, Ken, what do you think about paternity leave for guys when their wife has a baby? Look, I don't think we need a policy there. This is my whole point. Why do we need a policy? How about we just allow leaders to make good people decisions? Hey, your wife is really struggling, had a C-section, can't get up and down your third floor apartment. You do what you need to do to take care of her until she gets to a point. That's people and principle-based, not policy-based. How many of you have ever experienced something new, maybe something recently? Maybe it was a television show, a movie, a book, a recipe, a restaurant, whatever. And after you experienced it, you couldn't talk about it enough. It changed your whole perspective. That's why I want you to try ZipRecruiter. It's a free resource to you. So first of all, folks, I'm not selling you socks. And it's not a bait and switch. You're going to go sign up and then they bill you every month. It's none of that. It's free to you. Why? Companies pay ZipRecruiter. Companies. They're paying ZipRecruiter to go, hey, we know you've got talent and people that want jobs, and we want to know how we can get access to them. And Zip said, well, we got the system. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken, ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. I don't know why you would not add it to your strategy to at least let them go out there and work for you while you do your life and you decide if it's something you want to pursue. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken, ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. Albany, Georgia is where we go next. Paul is on the line. Paul, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet, sir. What's up?
So, I got a question for you. So, I have never worked in a union setting, and I do work for I'm not a union member, but the guys that work for me are. So, you know, in the trying to lead them, what is the best way to do so? Because there's always a certain fine line in between union and non-union, and I'm just really trying to figure out a way that I can lead these guys without being, the bad guy.
Yeah. Can you tell me some specific leadership challenges that you want my help on with these union guys?
Well, most of the time from all that I've heard here that these guys have had bad leaders in the past and just haven't been able to connect with their leaders. They've just been, like a tyrant for the most part. And just trying to lead these guys and, let them know that, I'm here for them to support them and do everything that I can. But then in the end, I don't want them to feed me to the wolves at the end of the day either.
Yeah, I like this question a lot. You're new in this role, yes?
Yes.
How long you been in the job?
This company that I'm with now, I've been here since January. Okay. I was working in manufacturing, doing practically the same job in a non-union plant for 22 years. So it's quite a different change for me coming here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is the advice I'm going to give you is true whether you're leading union guys or not from a non-union position, because there's the rub there, right? But you already began to answer your own question when you said that you've talked to these guys and they've never had a real legitimate relationship with their leader. It's always been a tyrant thing. And that's in the shadow of, so that style of authoritarian dictator, my way, the highway, right, is in the shadow of an already fractured relationship because, there's only certain things you can do. My guess is that the authoritarian has limited authority because of the union. So yeah. A non-union leader can't just, hire, fire, penalize. They can't do that because of the union relationship and the representation. So all that together has always led to a very, I can't think of another way to say it other than just an unpleasant relationship with leadership figures. So
right.
My advice is that you need to love these guys and stop worrying about leading them. And I would love them first, and then they will follow you, whether you're a union guy or not. Because let me tell you this, you can be a hardened union guy and be union all the way and all that stuff and still get up in the politics, but they could also know, Paul cares about us. I've never worked for a guy in my life like Paul who is trying to help me win. Paul is trying to help me win. He's not just trying to help me win in the job. Paul cares about what's going on in my personal life. And the guy just cares about all of us. That would be my desire for you, for people to say that about you.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you some specific tips, but I don't think I have to tell you much. I think you get that. So in other words, the exercise for you tonight, before you go to bed and tomorrow morning, first thing, I want you to repeat this exercise. I want you to ask yourself the question, what must be true for these union workers to know that I care about them?
Okay.
Answer that question. Not right now, but answer that question. And listen, this isn't a talking tour. This is day in and day out asking these questions. What can I do to help you win?
Okay.
How's everything going in your personal life? Everything good?
So far, everything's good.
No, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you that's the question you ask them. You see what I'm saying? It's how are you doing and how can I help you win? Meet them where they are, brother. Help them win. Okay. There are certain things you can't do anyway. So, and showing them that you care for them, then they will begin to trust you. And when they begin to trust you, watch, they'll actually follow you, whether you're a union leader or a non-union leader. Does that make sense? I want to pause and let you ask any questions, but I'm not trying to oversimplify it. That really is the answer.
No, I like simple, but yes, that makes all the sense in the world, you know. And since I've listened to several shows, you know, on my way to work and coming here and try to apply those same things with these guys for that simple reason, just to be able to have them to trust me, because that's all I really want in the end, is for them to trust me, let them know that I'll do my best for them. And in return, that's what I ask of them in return.
But see, they'll give you that if you give it to them first. In other words,
yeah,
they will return the serve. But you know, you have to lead, and you've got to love them. I think leadership strategies are great. We teach it. We got Entree Leadership, a wildly popular podcast, a part of the Ramsey Network. I teach on that stage. I'm going to be teaching leaders next week. I'm passionate about teaching leadership principles. I'm passionate about helping leaders grow in their leadership, because you can grow.
Yes.
But all of the books and all of the tips and all of the conferences and all of the podcasts and all of that stuff, it will not work if you don't truly love the people you lead. I'm taking on golf right now, Paul, and it's wildly frustrating at times and exhilarating at others. And you know what I've learned, Paul, about golf, and it's true of leadership?
What's that?
I can't fix my slice, my hook, or anything. I can't hit the ball longer, straighter, until I master the art of just making solid contact with the ball. Make sense?
That's right.
I got to learn to hit the ball on the sweet spot of the club first. And the more consistent I get with that, then I can work on learning how to hit a fade or a draw or work on my distance control. In other words, the minutiae and the expertise of the golf game, you can't get any of that until you learn how to consistently make good contact with the ball. The same is true of leadership. To be a great leader and to work on strategy and move a team, you can't do any of that at all until you love people to the point that they begin to trust you. And when they trust you because of how you love them and care for them and see them as human beings first, until that's established, they will not truly trust you. But the great news is, when that's established and they trust you, then they'll follow you. That's a masterclass in leadership. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. Because it is the simplification of what leadership is about, which is loving your people. So, love, then lead. Got it?
Got it.
Paul, I think you're going to revolutionize that team of union workers. I think you are.
I hope so.
Now, here's the deal, Paul. Well, no, you can't say "I hope so." You got to say "I know it." Now, here's what I don't know. I don't know how quick you're going to turn the ship around. I would suspect it's going to take you a little bit longer, and you're going to have to commit to loving these folks, even when they don't love you back, and just sticking with it. Like that troubled teen who's just trying to push you away and push you away and push you away, and you go, "You can keep on pushing me away, but I ain't going to stop showing up and loving on you." And one of these days, you're going to realize I'm the real deal. And that's going to take some time, especially in this environment, where they got way more history than you have time with them. But you hang in there and you stay with it. Don't you dare stop, and it'll turn. I promise. You matter. You have what it takes. Press on.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.